Hello, I'm joined today by Dr. Christine Domigan from the Marketing Discipline at NUI Galway to talk about social innovation and the Sea for Society project that she is currently working on. Hello, Christine, how are you today?
Hello, Angela, I'm very well. Lovely to be here with you today.
Would you like to start by introducing yourself?
Well, I'll start by telling you that I work here in the marketing discipline within the business school in NUI Galway. I'm head of the discipline and senior lecturer in marketing, and I'm also research cluster leader for social innovation and public policy. So my work is all about people's behaviour and changing people's behaviour, helping them to modify their behaviour so that it benefits them and also benefits society. So for example, regardless of what age you are, whether you're 20 or whether you're 70, we know that physical activity is very good for you and it adds to the quality of your life and your overall well-being. So you may be interested in exercising, but you might find that there are no facilities in your area, for example, to cycle. In which case, a lot of our work is looking at the environment and the difficulties or challenges that are there that block people from engaging in good, positive, healthy behaviours. So in this case, you might be interested in cycling paths, but equally, it might involve a workplace programme at lunchtime that allows you to exercise. So much like successful firms like Coca-Cola, Nike, Riverdance, even U2, we use concepts such as research, products and services and pricing to help improve people's lives. We call this social marketing. And when you scale that up and it affects a lot of people, it can be called social innovation as well.
What is social innovation?
Well, the easiest way to think about social innovation is to break it down. So take the word innovation. And when you and I hear the word innovation, it has us think about new things, new stuff. So it might be new technologies, it might be new products. Effectively, innovation is about new ways of doing things. And if you add in the word social in front of innovation, for social innovation, then you're talking about new ways, new technologies, new products around social issues, such as health, education, justice, inequality. And you're looking for solutions to improve the way that we live our lives. So you're developing a more holistic, a joined up way of living. From an Irish standpoint of view, we would say that social innovation, you know, new strategies, new ideas, new organizations that meet social needs. And it's all about improving our lives, making our lives better, saving lives and solving problems. And social innovation can cover issues like governance, health and well-being, education and youth, we've already said, and it's all about local development and communities, increasing our ability to improve the way our society works. An example of this might be microloans, a very famous example made available to women in developing countries where they can set up their own businesses. Closer to home in the EU, you would be looking at green jobs for social inclusion. And here in Ireland, a lovely example recently there on RTE concerned with social farms, all looking at new ways of improving people's lives. More technical definition, social innovations, new solutions that meet a social need and that make better use of assets and resources. But really, the main point here is that it's about enhancing society and enhancing our lives so that we're all better off. Interestingly, an awful lot of our social innovation work here in NUI Galway is concerned with wicked problems facing society.
Wicked problems. So what are wicked problems? Can you give me examples where social innovation might help with those problems?
Wicked problems are difficulties facing a society where no one person or one organization like the government have the answer. So if you think of climate change, sustainability, biodiversity, these are all examples of wicked problems. They're issues facing a country, facing a group of people, and it needs a diversity of stakeholders and organizations to come together to solve the problem. So they're messy, they're difficult. There's a lot of conflict and tension involved because one group see a way forward, but that might have implications for another group and they don't agree with it. Take something like alcohol and binge drinking. That's a wicked problem. Historically, when we think of binge drinking, you might associate that with fun-loving 20 to 23-year-old or maybe college students. However, add in a driving aspect to the cocktail and you have a road safety group of people who have another understanding of binge drinking. But alcohol and binge drinking doesn't stop there with the young or with safe driving. We now know that there's a big issue binge drinking among the over 30s and also with 55-year-olds who are staying at home. So when you talk about wicked problems, different people have different experiences and understandings of the issue, such as binge drinking, and therefore they've got different solutions and options and ways to solve it. So what you're seeing with the alcohol and binge drinking, as well as diverse and different views of the problem, there's no one solution either. And we're seeing this across society that there are accelerating social issues no longer confined to one section. So if you're thinking about wicked problems, another way to think about them is that they're the opposite of tame or simple problems. So stop for a minute and think of a rocking horse. When you think of a rocking horse, rocking horses can be moved by outside forces. They'll sway in a predictable, simple manner for a little while before settling back into a static state and kind of business as usual. That's your tame problem. But when you think of wicked problems, they're much more like wild horses, like a herd of wild animals. They depend upon each other for their very survival. It only takes one horse to kick. Another spooks, and within seconds, the wild herd has taken off. Their flight path is unpredictable. It's constantly altering, responding to whatever is in their way, sometimes jumping obstacles, and other times adjusting direction and speed. Wicked problems are more like wild horses as opposed to your rocking horse. We have this very interesting insight come from the chief economist from the Bank of England, Andy Haldane, explaining. And social innovation looks to wicked problems and ways forward and manages them as if they were a herd of wild horses.
Can you tell me about some of the projects that you have worked on using social innovation?
We have a number of nationally funded projects that we've been working on over the last 2 to 3 years. One that comes to mind is called Simple. And Simple is about antibiotics and antimicrobial resistance. It's one of the big problems, one of the big health problems facing us globally. This is where resistance builds up in a community or a population when bacteria are exposed to an antibiotic and they change genetically. The antibiotic is no longer able to kill the bacteria and therefore treat the infection. So for us, the overprescription and consumption of antibiotics in the community is a big driver of antimicrobial resistance. And in terms of a wicked problem, you have to look at general practitioners and their behavior, as well as consumers and their behavior. There is also the vets and their behavior and farmers, all contributing to antimicrobial resistance. In this particular piece of research, we found a number of interesting leverage points that might help us manage solutions around this wicked problem. So, for example, the consultation between the GP and client was considered crucial to deciding whether to prescribe or consume an antibiotic. And the decision to prescribe and consume an antibiotic, it's very complex, going beyond the symptoms that are present. And a lot of other factors, like your past experience with antibiotics or with the illness, the interaction between you, the client, and the GP, your satisfaction levels, and time all come into the decision-making process. So the results showed us that there were a lot of factors at play and that there are different profiles of GPs and patients emerging out of what you think is the same problem. Another example has to do with Operation Transformation, the very, very successful Irish Life Fitness program that's been screened here in Ireland since 2007. Operation Transformation started off as a TV program, but now has become a lifestyle choice by many people. Research commissioned by Safe Food found that in 1 year alone, 186,000 people reported losing weight as a result of following the show, with 67% reporting that they would continue with their healthier lifestyle once the show had ended. So we have spent time meeting up with the different community members and participants and finding out from them what makes Operation Transformation successful. Why did it help them achieve this change in a healthy lifestyle? Which isn't easy because you're changing the food that you eat, how you cook, when you cook, what you cook. You're also changing the way you exercise. You're changing your family's lifestyle. So a very complex, difficult situation to achieve. And another project that we've been working on, and we're almost at the end of, is the EU-funded C for Society study.
Can you tell me more about the C for Society project?
Well, the C for Society project tackles a wicked issue. In this case, we're looking at sustainable marine ecosystems. We're looking at how mankind, how all of the different countries across Europe make use of the sea and our marine resources. The project brings together researchers, marine and land-based organizations, government, non-government bodies, as well as citizens, individuals, and youth in a mutual learning joint action program, all aimed around bringing about a blue society, a society that values, cherishes, and mines its sea and its resources. Funded by the EU 7th Programme, it's a mobilisation mutual learning project, and we're looking at issues around sustainable ocean management, stewardship of our marine resources, and practical solutions where we can change our daily behaviours so that they take care of our marine resources. A lot of people wouldn't know that mankind depends upon the oceans and its resources for its very survival. It's not just about transport or wind energy or food. The oceans account for 71% of our planet's surface and contain 97% of our planet's water. Most importantly, sea is essential for oxygen production. We often think of the rainforest as the lungs of the world. Well, so too are our seas in terms of oxygen production, CO2 absorption, and they also play a key role in our weather and our climate. So people and their behaviours across all of the different countries in Europe and around the world are fundamentally reshaping the marine environment. And no area of the ocean is unaffected by human behaviour. So if mankind and all of its different nations across the planet are to survive, we need to take care of our ocean so it takes care of us. So Sea for Society is about this. It's about changing the way we behave around the ocean. There are two different aspects to it. The first part of Sea for Society was about consultations and powerful conversations with stakeholders and citizens. And the second part was about taking that learning and knowing and insight and using it for social action, for social change, so that our lives are improved. So we completed powerful conversations with stakeholders all around Europe about the barriers to sustainable marine ecosystems.
When you talk about barriers in the Sea for Society project, can you tell me a little bit more about those barriers, Christine?
Well, if you go back to the notion of a wicked problem, you find that different groups of people have insights into the wicked problem. So it's almost like a bit of a jigsaw, or even better still, a Rubik's Cube. Each of them have a little window on what the problem is. If you can bring all of these experts together and they share their understanding of the problem, you begin to get the bigger picture. So when we talk about barriers, that's exactly what we did in Sea for Society. We talked with stakeholders across 9 different countries around their experiences, their knowledge, their expertise, and asked them what they saw as the barriers to a sustainable marine ecosystem. In total, they generated 774 barriers, obstacles, difficulties, or challenges, as well as 653 solutions for a sustainable marine ecosystem. So when we talk about barriers, we had different actors such as funders, business, marine experts, government, coming together to talk about the way forward to create a blue society, a society that values a sustainable marine ecosystem. Certain barriers appeared almost everywhere. So, for example, these unfounded attitudes and lack of awareness about marine issues crept up all over Europe. Much like a car, if you want a sustainable marine ecosystem to emerge, you have to understand what the issues are for a healthy ocean. But you've also got to understand how those issues, barriers, or components are related. So, like a car, you understand the brakes and you understand the steering wheel. To understand how they work, you have to look at them in relation to each other. And that's exactly what we were doing in society. We were understanding, identifying what the components of a blue society are. And we were also looking at how they were connected to each other.
And can you give us a flavour of these barriers?
Well, I mentioned one example of a particular group of barriers that cropped up almost everywhere across Europe were these unfounded attitudes and lack of awareness. So when we talked to stakeholders, they told us about the difficulties of seeing beneath the surface of the sea. And because people couldn't see beneath the surface, they didn't appreciate the value that was there in marine life. Equally, they didn't appreciate the damage, for example, that pollution can do. So that would be one set of barriers. Another had to do with lack of awareness. Lack of awareness was, again, not understanding, not having knowledge, not having insight into the role that the sea plays in transport or energy or tourism or our food supply. So we all have some ideas, but we don't have that knowledge of how our daily life influences, shapes, modifies, and affects the ocean. As well as the what bit, in terms of flavour, we know, for example, from this understanding and these powerful consultations with stakeholders, that this particular group of barriers, this lack of awareness and unfounded attitudes, has a trickle-down effect. So if you improve attitudes towards the ocean, we know that this then helps when it comes to governance strategies, and it helps resolve conflict, and it helps build collaboration among the different networks that use marine resources.
Are there any other interesting insights and lessons from the Sea for Society barriers?
Well, while it's very helpful to know about the barriers, obstacles, and difficulties to a healthy ocean, it's equally important to find a way forward. don't just want to leave our conversations with stakeholders on a negative note. So as well as asking about barriers, the stakeholders around Europe also spent a lot of time suggesting and thinking about and discussing solutions for progress and a way forward. Back to our social innovation. They were suggesting new ways of working, new ways of protecting our resources, local food resources and transport resources that use the sea. So they came up with a number of different options. Anything, for example, from easily accessible live events in a marine environment to campaigns that promote local products, and to campaigns that educate our young children as well.
Earlier you mentioned conversations with citizens and young adults. What do they have to say?
As well as talking to stakeholders and people who are classified as experts, when you come to social innovation, it's really important that you hear from and involve and work with people who are living in the areas that are affected by these issues. So it's really important that you get insights into how these wicked problems play out in people's everyday life. So for that reason, we talked with citizens and young people, that's 18 to 25 year olds, who weren't marine experts or wouldn't have had professional knowledge about the sea. And we consulted with them and talked to them and listened to what they had to say through day-long consultations about the sea and its resources and how the sea contributed to their daily life. So the citizens and youths shared with us the benefits that they experience from the sea. In total, we talked to 288 citizens, and between them, they generated a number of benefits and further contribution options that the sea generates for them.
Can you give me some examples of what those benefits were that the citizens mentioned?
There's a huge wide range of benefits that were coming up from citizen youths all across Europe. Some of them had to do with health. So, for example, people really valued being able to walk along the beach, relax, chill out, take a breather, take some time out from their busy work. And they appreciated both the physical and mental health benefits that that brought to their life. They also talked about marine coastal communities being a great place to live. So it had been about your family, your lifestyle. They mentioned, for example, food and how important the sea was in terms of food and food supply and food provision. So all round, even though the citizens and youths weren't technical experts, marine experts, they still appreciated, understood, and were able to talk about the different ways, whether it's transport, whether it was energy, health, tourism, place to live, or food, education, and the benefits that the sea contributed and that they would like to see the sea contributing to their life.
What happens now? We have all these barriers, conversations, consultations, and results. Where to from here?
Well, really for us, this is the nice piece of the work because this is where we get to use all of these barriers and conversations and solutions. And we start to look at making a difference, making a change and improving people's lives. So we are looking at movement on the ground and mobilization. We're looking at how we can take better care of our marine resources and systems while also benefiting from them as well. So we're looking at a number of different campaigns, interventions, mobilization activities and events that will appeal to different members right across society. So, for example, there are a number of films being developed at the moment by Sea for Society that talk to marine resources and how they contribute to our life. We have sea festivals running all over Europe for companies and organizations that might be interested in blue growth or blue jobs. We have blue talks and think tank sessions occurring. For young children, there are different educational packages and trails being put together, and lots of community initiatives, such as a science week based around marine resources, all aimed at helping different segments in society, both to learn about the sea and how it helps our lives, but also how we can change the way that we live, how we can look at our governance strategies, our educational strategies, our health strategies, and improve those so that we're working in harmony with the sea and we take a more stewardship approach to the sea and its resources.
So the Sea for Society project will be completed by December 2015. What's next for you in terms of research projects?
Well, one of the projects that follows on for Sea for Society is a Horizon 2020 project, which we've already started with partners around Europe and transatlantic partners as well. It's called Sea Change, and Sea Change is where we are looking at European citizens and their relationship with the sea, and we're working to empower them to become ocean literate citizens so that they can take direct and sustainable actions in their daily lives, in their family, in their communities, and in their societies as well, towards healthy seas and ocean, healthy communities, and ultimately a healthy planet.
Thank you very much, Christine. Lovely to hear about your insights from your research on the Sea Project. If you'd like to find out more about it, you can check it out on seaforsociety.eu. And indeed, if you want to find out more about Christine's research, please check out the Whitaker website at whitakerinstitute.ie. Christine, thanks very much.
Lovely chatting with you.